Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Mac, and you're listening to Mac's Musings. My guest tonight is John E. Stiff. Sorry, I hope that was correct or pronounced correctly, and he should be answering soon.
This is John.
Hi, John.
Hello.
Is Mac, and we are live on the air.
Excellent.
Okay, so I just want to get a few things out of the way before I let you talk. I did want to give the backer kit address for people that may want to get in there and maybe put some money in there to help out. The entire address, I'll give that first, is /skyrocket-pictures/manhattan-transfer-streaming-series. Now, the easy way to do it, people, is to go to backerkit.com and then in the search type Manhattan Transfer or even just Manhattan, because I did that. I just typed in Manhattan and it was the only one that came up. And just in case you don't know, Manhattan is spelled M-A-N-H-A-T-T-A-N. And now to get to my guest, John E. Stiff, a prolific, best-selling, multiple award-winning science fiction and mystery writer whose science fiction has appeared on Amazing Stories, Nature, and Dragon, and he's been translated into French, German, Italian, Japanese, Portuguese, Russian. So now, John, if you would please give the listeners a short or longish, whatever you want to say, autobiography about yourself.
Okay. I started writing science fiction around 1980, Manhattan Transfer was my sixth novel, published by Tor Books in the mid-90s. I was with Ace Books at first, and they published my Redshift Rendezvous novel, which was a Nebula Award finalist, which was a thrill. And I had a gap in my career for a while in the 2000s as life interfered, but I'm back and active and having a great time.
Well, good. I see that you live in Colorado Springs, isn't it?
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay, I thought I had that right. And you lived in New Mexico for a while when you were a kid?
From second grade through the end of high school, except for 1 year.
Yeah.
We moved to Tucson for 1 year and then back. My dad was an electrical engineer, so we moved.
Did you enjoy living there?
I did. I don't miss it a lot now because I mean, there are trade-offs with real small towns, but it was a good place to grow up, you know, exploring out in the desert. And we got to live 1 year up in the mountains nearby at Sacramento Peak, the solar observatory. So that was cool.
Yeah, it sounds like
almost
it.
Like living in the woods.
I'll bet. So, well, before we get into Manhattan Transfer, because I know that's the main goal of the show, but I do like to have people talk about, you know, their life, which you just did, because I said to make it as long or short as you wanted, and that's what you did. But I do want to go over some of the works. I mean, I'll just mention them. You don't even have to talk about them, but I just want the people to know that you do have other works out there. So the ones that I know of, anyway, are Scape Scope, Memory Blank, Death Tolls, Deep Quarry, Redshift Rendezvous, Manhattan Transfer, Reunion on Never End, Reckoning Infinity, and Pushback. Those are the novels. And then you also have novellas and a novelette. And one thing that I wanted you to talk about was Nick Knott. Tell us about Nick Knott.
Okay. Knott began life as a short story in Analog, set in a near future filled with human-like AIs that are all built by the lowest bidder. So they have a lot of human-like social problems and personality disorders. And it's a future we're getting closer and closer to all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, work was under option also for quite a while. But ultimately, Jeffrey Berman, who was one of the producers who originally optioned it, he and I have rewritten it now, well, I'm sure a dozen times at least, as things have evolved over time and we had better ideas. But we were now at the point where we have a pilot script and a series Bible for that. And I hope pretty soon we'll start trying to see if there's interest for that.
Cool. Okay, now, Manhattan Transfer, the novel, at least, that was in 93, I believe, that was published?
Right. Right.
And
yeah,
what brought that about?
Was 90.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sometimes there's a lag, and I don't realize people are talking, so I'm sorry about that. Go ahead with what you were saying.
No, I'm sorry, too. The hardcover was in 93, and the paperback was in 94. Working backwards, I had lost my first agent because he was very ill. And I was kind of auditioning for a new agent, and he wanted big ideas. And so I was trying to think big, and having aliens capture a huge, you know, entire American city seemed big. And you know, it sums up some images, like the old Superman comic books with a tiny city under a dome. And Stephen King came out with Under the Dome a few years after Manhattan Transfer came out.
Mm-hmm.
That was the genesis, is I was trying to find something very big to please my potential future agent, who did become my agent and sold it to Tor.
Hmm. Well, there's supposed to be someone calling in, of course, as you know. But before he does call in, I figure I'd let you talk about some of your other stuff you want that you want to talk about, because I don't want to just pick one that you may not want to talk about, or you may not have much to say about it. So if you want to take a novel or a novella or something that you've done and talk about that, I want you to do that now.
Well, thank you. I think the two projects that are consuming most of my energy lately are A Tiny Time Machine, which is a young adult trilogy that just finished. The third book just came out. And then in October, a combined volume of the whole trilogy will be published by Amazing Stories. And in December, Amazing Stories will also publish my first full-length science fiction novel in quite a while, just about the sole survivor of a botched military space mission. I'm really pleased that those are going to be out this year.
Well, that all sounds very cool. So, I'm sorry. Were you going to say something else?
No, just cleared my throat. I'm getting over a cold.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I'm feeling great now. But
that's good. I'm glad that you are, because I might have to clear my throat later, but I didn't have a cold or anything. I just have asthma, and I have allergies, and the pollen count's been, like, all the way to the top.
It's a wonderful time of year, huh?
yeah, it really is. Well, in Ohio, the weather is so weird, and I know that a lot of states say this, but there are a few that it really is true for the state, where if you don't like the weather, you can just wait a few minutes and it'll change. And
right.
a really good friend of mine that just recently moved here from, I believe it was L.A., and he was saying that this is the only state that he's ever been to, and he's been to almost every state, that he could experience all four seasons in one day. And that's true.
Right. Right. I didn't realize that you're in Ohio. I've got some family in Columbus. It's a small world. But we have a similar saying in Colorado about the weather being changeable. And
well, yeah, most states do. Here it's like really crazy. Well, like what it's been this week. We've had 80, and then we've gone down to 20. And that's within just a few hours. 80 to 20, 20 to 80.
Yep.
And then for a few days here in April, near the end of April, we had frost warnings. I didn't think we really got any, at least not where I live. But it was cold enough to, because it was in the 20s. And we've gotten snow in April and even in May. So I wouldn't be surprised at anything. I wouldn't be surprised if we got snow in June.
Yeah, we had a little snow yesterday, and right now it's 75.
See, that's funny. And it's kind of like that here. So, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, crazy. A lot of places.
Well, yeah. And here it can be like within a few minutes even. Because one day I went out to the store, and I went out with a jacket because it was, you know, kind of cold. And then when I came back, I was carrying the jacket because it was hot. And the opposite happens. Within less than an hour, the temperature can go from 80 to 30 within an hour.
Wow.
And that happens all the time. That's why most people in Ohio, they keep a jacket in their car even in the summertime.
Mm.
Because even in the summertime, it can drop way down. And so they want to be ready.
Right.
Well, I don't want to talk too much about the weather, but so I know you talked about it a little bit, but I want you to like get started talking about it, like you know, the Manhattan Transfer, I know you did the basic storyline, but get a little bit more into it, and then hopefully Sky will be calling. I'm not sure when he was going to call, but he should be calling shortly. So we'll let you get into that, and then once he gets on, you guys are going to talk about the whole backer kit thing, because obviously you know more about that than I do. Okay, so tell us about Manhattan Transfer a little more than what you already have told us.
Okay, well, after you know the city being kidnapped is early on. It's not like the climax of the book. So that's like chapter one or two, and when the residents of the city can see out again, they find out that they're aboard an enormous alien starship, and they're surrounded by hundreds of other alien cities, all under their own domes. So they have questions. They want to know why they're there, how they can get out, primarily. And so there are a number of stories about, you know, individual people rising to the occasion or failing to rise to the occasion. Mm-hmm. One of the criticisms of the book was that in this reviewer's view, too many of the New Yorkers kind of took things in stride and adapted to this bizarre situation too quickly. Like I say, this was published in 1993. Then we had 9/11, and we got to see, you know, firsthand how strong people are, how resilient they are. So the balance of the book is telling their story of trying to escape and turn the tables on their captors. And then the TV Bible goes on from there to tell a longer story with a bigger cast, bigger canvas.
Cool. So when you, when the whole thing, to take it from a book to a series, which someone, I won't give the names, but they wanted that to be the title of the show, Manhattan Transfer from Book to Series with John Eastis, which is you, of course. How did that all come about? Did someone come to you? Did you go to them? I'll let you tell the people about that.
Okay. Well, the book was optioned for film even before it was published. The original people optioning it were at Starz, run by Dodi Fayed, who, you know, you may recall was the fellow who died with Princess Di in that car crash. That failed to proceed following his death. And somewhere in the very early 2000s, I got a call from this guy named Sky Conway. He said he loved the book and he'd love to do a low budget feature of it. And we talked, and he was unable to put together a deal then. But over time, during the last two decades, he has put together a number of low budget films, increasing in budget each time, all crowdfunded. And he contacted me, you know, 3 or 4 years ago for the next iteration of discussions. And he said, you know, I think we'd have better luck and it would be more fun to actually do a series, TV series. And so we started talking about that. Ultimately, I provided a series Bible, and he hooked me up with a writer he's worked with on some of his projects, Ethan Kalk. And together we finished the pilot for the pilot script that I had only partly finished. And for the last year plus, he's been trying to set things in motion. You know, he now has an amazing cast lined up, ready to do this. He's got people like Casper Van Dien and Walter Koenig, and I should look at the list. He's got director John Piccinino ready to direct. He's got John Billingsley, who was in one of my all-time favorite movies, The Man from Earth, and he's been in The Orville. Tim Russ, Bonnie Gordon, Dominic Keating, a whole bunch of people, Robert Fornero, Eve Morrow, Rico E. Anderson, a new woman, Shalee Lizette Brannon, Abigail Zoe Lewis. They did a live stream three weeks ago with several of the key actors talking about their enthusiasm for the book. And, you know, given that it's taken like 30 years to get to this point, I have mixed feelings about optimism and guarded pessimism and so on, but their enthusiasm was just really infectious. It really felt good. So I think we're pretty close, but you know, with crowdfunding, it's never guaranteed. So I have fingers crossed, and I think a lot of them have fingers crossed. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, crowdfunding is, you know, it's great on one hand, and then on the other hand, it can, like, not happen because the people don't get enough, you know, depending on if they have any of their own funds, because a lot of people don't. And some of them, they don't have that much funds to go to it because they have, you know, like day jobs, I guess one of the words for it is. So they don't really have a lot of money to go to it. So they have crowdfunders. And many times it does come to fruition and other times it doesn't. But once this I think this is Sky here. So if you hold on one second.
Sure.
Hello, Sky.
Hello, Earthlings. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. How are you, John?
Hi, John. Hi, Mac Attack.
Hi, Sky.
I've been listening in on your guys' conversation, so I thought I'd drop in on the mothership to say hello. And thank you, Mac, right off the bat for hosting this fine podcast and involving John. And so excited to be with you today. and to discuss this further. So I'm sorry I interrupted. So go right ahead, guys, and then I'll just jump in whenever.
No, that's okay.
This is the perfect time.
I agree with John. I mean, John, was there anything else you were going to say?
I don't remember what it was, if there was anything. We're good.
Okay. So, Sky, before you get started, just give whatever listeners we have, give them a short autobiography about yourself and then how you went about getting in contact with John about doing Manhattan Transfer.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. So for your audience and others, I am the CEO of Atomic Video, and we're a new streaming network that's just launching. So right now we're building up our library for that. I've been involved in independent film production since my very first short film I did, which was called Roddenberry on Patrol, which is sort of a parody, a spoof on how Gene Roddenberry came up with the idea for Star Trek, and it was directed by Tim Russ, and it goes all the way back to 2003, if I remember correctly. And I don't know, I know, Mac, you're a big Star Trek fan. You've probably seen that short, right?
Yes, I have.
Oh, yeah.
It was good.
Great. Well, thank you. So, yeah, we had Nichelle Nichols in it. Walter Koenig, Tim Russ directed, he was in it. Robert Beltran, oh gosh, so many of the group we had in that. And then we got the bigger, bolder idea of taking the next step forward, which was to do our own Star Trek independent film, which through hook or crook and through just great timing, we had the ability to actually produce a full-length feature film called Star Trek of Gods and Men. And I'm sure you've seen that one, right, Mac?
No, definitely. Yeah, I've seen that. And that's a very good film.
Oh, thank you so much. So, yeah, it was a real, real pleasure to do that. Way back, that's actually the genesis of doing that film. Went back to 1991, when they were filming Star Trek VI, and I was with Nichelle Nichols. She was my business partner in many, many ventures. But back in 91, she let me read that script before they filmed it. And, personally, she and I just thought that they could have done a lot more with the script, not taking anything away from the director, Nick Myers, and the writer and all. But just that we thought it could have been more like Star Trek IV, which could have been an ensemble and could have been a great way to sort of wrap up that whole series and bring in all seven rather than focus on the trio, and even though they did touch on some of the actors, it wasn't without, they could have done a lot more. And so Nichelle and I at that time made a pact. We said, if we ever got the opportunity, if we ever could in the slightest way do our own Star Trek film, we would try to do something vastly different and more what we thought would be in keeping with what Gene would have liked. And so that was the initial discussions from 91. And fast forward on that, Walter Koenig, as a dear, dear, dear friend of mine, and had told me he was going to be doing this sort of fan film up in Ticonderoga on these beautiful replica sets that James Colley had done. And he said he's going to be doing this a Chekhov episode. And I said, my God, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. How are you not going to be shut down by Paramount or CBS at the time? He said, they're just allowing fans to make these films. So I said, well, let me know how that goes and let me know how those sets are. And, hey, if it all works out, maybe we'll do our own film. And Walter came back and said that he had just a marvelous experience and it was a great shoot and professionally done and felt that the sets would be, appropriate place to do even a feature length film. So that sort of started that whole voyage. And then we went on to do after that, another Star Trek pilot concept called Star Trek Renegades. So I don't know if you've seen that one or not. Mac?
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course I have. Another good one. And that has my good buddy Manu in it, so, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I love Manu. So that one, you know, again, we crowdfunded for that one. We did very well. So we had the support of thousands of fans, for which I'm eternally grateful. I hope we gave them their money's worth. I think we did. A story that's probably never been, I've never talked to anybody about it, was after we did that film, we actually, you know what, I'm gonna back up the story for one moment. When we did Star Trek of Gods and Men, Tim Russell was meeting with the folks at Paramount, and I've never told the story publicly to anybody either. Tim was down at the home video department at Paramount, and so he was there for another project. I think it was an online video game or something they were doing. This was in 2008, I think, so after we had finished Star Trek of Gods and Men. And the folks there and the home video department loved the film so much that they wanted to actually put it out on video. And Tim had excitedly called me from that meeting and said, hey, look, the folks here at Paramount want to put it on home video. They love it so much. They want to make it essentially part of the canon, but that you'd have to go to CBS and get those guys over there to sign off on that. Because at the time, Paramount, turns out, you know, the IP, the intellectual property, was sort of split in half. And CBS mm-hmm. had the television rights, and Paramount had the feature film rights. And so I don't want to take up all the time telling what happened, but basically had reached over to CBS, and they could not find any. They just couldn't get it, as much as they wanted to get it approved. They just couldn't, because it had Star Trek is such a convoluted intellectual property, so many parties involved in ownership of it or stakeholders in it, that they couldn't get it approved. So it was never put out on home video. Same thing kind of happened with Star Trek of Renegades. We had finished that up, and the folks at CBS actually watched it, loved it as well. But we couldn't move forward with the series because during that time, again, CBS had the rights to Star Trek, and Paramount had the license rights to make films, but Paramount's rights prevented them from doing a TV series until that agreement had wound up. And subsequently, a year later, that's when that cleared up, and then they made Star Trek Discovery, and all the future shows they're now coming out with now. So we had come close in two instances with those properties. But, you know, the main thing I know we're here to talk about, not so much is Star Trek, because I know, again, Mac, you're a big fan. I know John is, and of course I am. And that for us, like, that has made these Star Trek shows. Or a lot of them are on board to make Manhattan Transfer. We're excited because it's an original concept, a big concept, as John had mentioned. And I think even, and I know it would make a great feature film. I think for a TV series, it's even better because we're able to tell really two stories. And that's how television is structured. You have your A and then your B storylines. Your A storyline in this case is, in New York City's abducted and pulled up into the mothership. Now, how do the Manhattanites, are they going to survive? Is Earth survived? You know, can they go back home? Sort of, it's really a story about like Wizard of Oz. You know, how can we get back home? And then we have the B storylines, which are all of our. We have a large ensemble. I know John listed through some of the actors that we have playing our roles, and so it's a large ensemble cast. We're going to follow their lives, and of course every new episode that we come out with will feature one of their own storylines as well. So it's big in many ways because we can cover both the big story arc of what happens with this mothership, what happens to all these other alien cities, and of course I'm not giving anything away by saying that we've got hundreds of these alien cities in their own domes, so the Manhattanites have got to figure out a way to make contact with these other alien cities and eventually work together to make their way to go home for every alien home. So it's a big story like that. We're probably starting off with Backer Kit, to help initially raise the initial pre-production funds, which we were already successful. And now we're on to raising the next tranche of funding, which would be for production. We also intend to do, I don't know if you know, Mac, you can also do crowdfunding not only just for donors, but now you can do it for shareholders as well. So
yeah,
for equity
yeah,
in the can. Project. So we're going to be going on WeFunder, which is the world's largest platform to do that. And we're going to be launching that just when we wrap up the Backer Kit donor campaign. So then we'll roll right into that for the balance of the production funds out, which we can't raise on Backer Kit. So we're really trying to bring more than just Star Trek fans, of course, just any science fiction fans or any fans who really want to watch, in this case, what we think we're going to be able to produce, which is high quality, great science fiction, hard sci-fi, because that's what John really specializes in, wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, I'd say that.
And it's really about sense of wonder, and so it harks back to, that's why I bring up Star Trek, because it really goes back to that. I consider him my mentor, would have loved a story like Manhattan Transfer, and it's told a good old classic sense, in the Roddenberry sense, or whether it's Arthur C. Clarke or Heinlein and all those great grand masters. And it has a sense of wonder about it, and certainly the main book does, and we're going to be exploring those same kind of concepts, even though it's dystopian in one sense.
I hate to interrupt you, but we have a caller. If you could just hold on a minute. Try to hold that thought. Hello, caller?
You got a body from Watertown, New York.
Well, welcome. This is Mac, and you're on Mac's Musings. And so give us a little bit about yourself and then say whatever your comment or question is.
Oh, I know Jack Trevino. I know about Sky. They're going to do the Star Trek thing. I got to live in Northern New York, and I was wondering, man, I'd love to be involved in needing services up here in upstate New York, or town New York, Northern New York. I would love to be involved in your project. I did H Trek.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you.
I did Star Trek films with Doug. What's up in Ticonderoga?
Oh, of course. So with James Colley and his whole group.
That's true, yes. I know Jack, too. Jack Trevino. I know him.
Sure, of course. Where is Jack? I think Jack's supposed to be coming on this call, too. Calling him Jack Trevino.
Yeah. Nice to meet you, sir. I'd like to jump on.
You should make sure Jack knows to contact you soon. I do hope he's listening, too.
I hope so.
Oh, I'm sure he is. So what did you do for Star Trek Continues?
I wasn't on that. I was in Star Trek Phase 2, 8 episodes. It's a web series. He had, what's he put on, Ticonderoga?
It was called Star Trek Continues, I think.
I hate to interrupt you. There's another caller, so hold that thought.
They're piling on.
It'll take a sec. Hello, new caller?
Yes.
Hello? Hi. You're on the air, but if you don't mind, there was somebody in the middle of saying something, so I'll let them finish.
Sure.
Go ahead, Ed.
Oh, okay. I was in episodes on a series on a web series. It's on YouTube right now. I was one with Walter. I was with Barbara Luna, Denise Crosby, George Takei, and I'd love to get back involved with it again.
That sounds great.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, before he starts to feel like left out, new caller, give us your name and say whatever comment or question it is that you have.
This is Jack Trevino calling. I heard my name,
okay.
So I heard Sky call.
I knew it was you, Jack, but I can't do that.
And so hello, John, Sky, Ed.
Hi, Jack.
Well, it's a party now.
Yeah, see, we know Jack.
I knew it was you, but I have
to
pretend like I don't know. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes. That's okay. I've been listening to the whole show, and I've been taking in everything everybody said, and like I was telling Sky, he told me about this project, Manhattan Transfer, about 14 years ago. Read the book and the script, and he asked me my thoughts on it. I said, I think this has great potential. I mean, you can go on to tell. There's so many stories. There was an old show on TV years ago called The Naked City, which was about, I'm pretty sure, New York City. And there are 8 million stories in The Naked City. And so with all the different stories going on, how are these people going to, work their way into a way to either get out or adapt or whatever? There's different ways you can go with it. It's kind of like the TV series The Walking Dead. The zombies were not really the main – I mean, zombies were in it, but it wasn't about zombies. It was about people, how they adapted, how they formed unions, mm-hmm. how they, worked together and worked against each other. And so this is – the aliens are going to be there, and, of course, we're going to, deal with them, but – how are these people going to deal with all these things? And that's the human interest story. Just like the old Star Trek shows, everything was about the human equation, and put them in this situation and see how they adapt to it.
Right.
Well, Ed, you sounded like you were ready to say something else. Sorry, Sky. Sounded like you were going to say something else. So I'll let you say whatever it is that you were going to say.
Well, my character was Lieutenant Haller, Haller, H-A-L-L-E-R, for the Star Trek Phase 2. I'd love to get involved with your project, even being a background extra or any kind of character. I'd love to jump on board.
Excellent.
And I hope you do use him, Sky, because he's I don't mean to interrupt anybody, but Ed is a good friend of mine, so... if you do take him on, that would be real nice, because he's real good, real good.
Well, if you work for James Colley, then you can certainly work with us.
Oh, yeah, I love it. Oh, yeah. Nice.
Does anybody have a question for John?
Well, I had a question early on. I just was wondering where did you get all your ideas? Where do they come from? Do you get them from the news? Did you sit when you were a kid, fantasizing about how things would be, or just where do your ideas come from? Or do they just come to your mind all of a sudden?
Most things I don't get an idea out of the blue that's ready to go, but I get ideas from everything in life. It seems like a book I've read, a snippet of conversation I hear or mishear, or a line of dialogue I really like on a TV show. But we're in the golden age of TV in my book, for what it's worth. But
what's your favorite show, John?
Yeah,
by the way.
I think For All Mankind has to be right up there. It tastes very, but boy, the execution is just wonderful. And I think the story is terrific, and they've got a wonderful cast. It's just, Apple seems to really have a high bar right now for shows.
How many seasons are they on with that show now?
I think they just finished season 4.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know
but
it was on that
Apple
long already.
Did.
I caught the first couple
Apple
episodes,
did.
But just never picked it up.
Yeah,
a
friend of mine was not pulled into it because it starts out in the past, because it's an alternate history where it diverges and we track what happens if the Russians got to the moon first. But I loved it.
Did I hear?
Yeah, it's a great concept.
Guy, did I hear you say when I asked John where he got his ideas from? I thought I heard you say he smokes a lot of pot.
I didn't say that.
Oh, I mean, he's in Colorado.
It's more like
but,
it's more like LSD, I think.
Oh,
yeah, that's,
Yeah, I'll probably give up some of the mystery, but that's not me. Yeah.
But wait a minute, didn't the Beatles experiment with all that to expand their mind and expand their music repertoire?
Yeah, they may have, but the story I like is Damon Knight, I guess, was a famous drinker, maybe did a little pot when he was, but one of his brilliant observations when he was drunk one time or stoned otherwise was that feet go into shoes. That was his brilliant revelation. So I think he decided at that point it was not a good creativity measure.
He wrote the short story To Serve Man, which became
right.
the very famous Twilight Zone episode. So
right.
he must have been high when he wrote that, because that was a great one.
I think he was probably higher when he agreed to be the first president of science fiction and fantasy writers of America.
Oh, yeah.
As a group, we tend to eat our young.
Good eating, huh? That's funny.
Right.
So, Jack, you should introduce yourself to the audience and give them a little bit of your background, which you did, especially, of course, besides Star Trek Gods and Men and Star Trek Renegades, which you were so instrumental in, but what you did actually for Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Well, I was able, Star Trek was the only series on the air at the time that was open to outside writers, and they had open submissions, and they allowed you to write scripts and stuff and send them in. So through a lady that I met, Tony Marbury, we got together, and we were able to pitch stories. And on our second pitch session, we sold two stories, Indiscretion and Little Green Men. And they went on to become fan favorites. So we were very pleased with that. They actually invited us to go and pitch in person. All the pitches were done over the telephone. Thursdays at 7 p.m. here in Texas, 5 p.m. in Los Angeles. But they actually they told us if we wanted, we could go out to the studio and meet the actors, tour the sets. They couldn't guarantee who we would meet because they didn't know who was going to be there that day and what episode they would be filming. So we went out there and we pitched first. And then, of course, they asked you to bring no more than five ideas and no less than three. And whatever would fit on a 3x5 index card. And back in the 90s, this was when computers were just starting to get going. So everything was written down on cards. And Tony was very anxious and nervous, and the whole morning, the whole day, and I was as calm as a cucumber. And when we got to the pitch room, my mind went totally blank.
Oh.
I didn't even know what my name was. And Tony jumped in and started off all the stories. So we sold another one on that day for the next season, called Quorum. It never got produced, but it got cannibalized, I would say, into about three or four different episodes. But they took a lot of the ideas from the story, and then they expanded on them and made episodes out of them.
That's great.
Of course they did. With no credit, though, for you.
Right.
Well,
but we
go
got
there.
Paid.
We got paid. That's all that counts. That's good.
Yeah, we got paid, and once we got paid, then it's their property, and they told us, you got paid, and we can do whatever we want with it. And
there you go.
We were just happy to be able to play in their sandbox.
Yeah, exactly.
We created a recurring character for the series, Tora Zial, who was Dukat's half Bajoran, half Cardassian daughter. And when they started using her in subsequent episodes, we called in and they said, hey, well, do we get residuals? And they said, well, you created a daughter, but we created the character. And that is true. We just created the daughter. But it was gratifying to see that they used that character in, like, I think 7 or 8 episodes.
Yeah, nice. Good.
How'd you come up with the idea for Little Green Men, Jack?
Well, I worked out here in San Antonio at a major research center since the early 70s. And, of course, the scientists were all over the place. And when I was a little kid, I always was intrigued by UFOs, and especially the Roswell incident. And I was listening to a an episode of Unsolved Mysteries where they were interviewing the wife of the pilot that had flown the alien bodies to, I think it was Andrews Air Force Base. And on his deathbed, he told her that they were real. And he described them as short aliens with big heads, big ears, sunken eyes. And when he said that, I was like, hey, that's Quark. That's Quark. And so that's how that came about. And the writers, they loved it. They loved it. The writer that took our pitch and bought the story from us, he said he immediately visualized the scene where the military was interrogating Quark with a heat lamp on his forehead, and he was perspiring, and they even put that into the episode. So
all right.
When they can start,
oh wow,
when they can start visualizing scenes from your pitch, then you know you had them.
Amen.
But enough of me. So let's get back to Manifest.
Well, we're down to like the last 12 minutes or so. And so what I was going to do is to give each of the callers, and I'll let you know when I'm ready for you to talk, to give each of the callers like 2 minutes and then give the rest of it to John for whatever he needs to say, so needs or wants to say. So we'll start with Ed. What would you like to say in about 2 minutes?
Oh, 2 minutes. Oh, the storyline sounds fantastic. Are you going to shoot in California, or are you going to shoot up in more by New York City or on that way? You shoot this.
So that's a good question. We're planning on shooting in Los Angeles, but perhaps our first shoot date will be exteriors in New York City in August. So that would be so that way we can capture some real authentic, even though we can shoot on certain lots that look just like New York City here in LA, which mostly is done here. I want to get the real deal and have Walter Koenig there with us, and perhaps some others. So we may do 1 day of exterior shoots in New York City.
That sounds fine. Are you putting any casting calls out there for like background extras or anything like that?
More than likely, we're going to go down that route. I mean, we're certainly going to reach out to fans that are supporting Manhattan Transfer. So the first reach out would be to our supporters on BackerKit or on WeFunder for our equity shareholders. So we'll give them the first chance to get involved that way.
Okay, that's
after
good.
That, if we don't have enough extras, then we'll have a casting call for extras for that.
Oh, that sounds good. Thank you. Sounds good.
Of course. Yeah.
It was nice meeting you both. All right.
Well, bye, Ed, but you can stay till the end if you like. I mean, that's
I'm
fine.
Still, yeah, I'm still on. You're fine. Yeah.
Okay, I thought you said goodbye. Sorry. Okay, I'll move. Okay, sorry about that. I'll move on to back to Jack, I should say. Anything you want to say in, like, the next 2 minutes?
Just that I think that Manhattan Transfer, the series has tremendous potential to tell a wide variety of stories. I mean, there's so many ways, you know, directions that each episode could go. And hopefully each episode will leave the viewer wanting more. What's going to happen next? You know, and I'm sure that there'll probably be additional characters interacting with the main ensemble cast. So I'd like to see, you know, all kinds of actors joining them for individual episodes, if possible. You know, Sky has a lot of actors that he's used in the various productions. It'd be nice to see, you know, some other Star Trek people and some other people. We had Adrian Wilkinson, who was in Renegades, and she was from Xena series, and other actors that, you know, they've been in the science fiction genre that we could see pop up. Maybe other people from Casper Van Dien's background. So there's all kinds of people that could show up, and I think it would do a great job putting an episode together. And I'm sure Sky's going to tell the listeners where to go to help become part of the campaign.
Yeah, we will get to that. Were you done talking, Jack? I didn't want to just cut you off.
No, I think that's it. Just, you know.
Okay.
I'm
all so, right.
Happy to be.
Thank you, Jack.
Of
you'll be writing episodes too for us. So.
Wow.
You can write all those
nice,
rich, delicious characters into it.
Okay, Sky. This is your chance now. 2 to 3 minutes. For whatever
so
you want
to
say.
2 to 3?
Yeah.
That's all I get? Kidding. I talk too much usually.
What?
No, but the bottom line is appreciate all the help we've already received to this point. Our show can't be made without the support of fans who get engaged with us, can be a part of this journey. And so we ask that all those that are listening and tell your friends to – I can't give you the link over the podcast, but just go to backerkits.com and just enter in Manhattan Transfer, and the you know, our offering shows up in so many different ways. It's so many different levels that you can be involved with, just even a $10 level or $35, and you can get the actual streaming of the pilot when it's completed, and all the way up to, in fact, we just offered a perk where Walter Koenig and the group of us are going to be going to Yankee Stadium on August the 20th, and you can actually join with Walter, who is a lifelong Yankee fan. He actually grew up in New York City and so watched Joe DiMaggio and Yogi Berra and Mickey Mantle, and he hasn't been back to the new stadium at all. And it's been many, many years, so he's looking forward to doing that. And we're trying to get it so he can actually throw out the game ball. So that would be a fabulous perk for anyone that's certainly that's a Yankee fan, Walter Koenig fan, and if you live anywhere in the region, it'd be easy to get to Yankee Stadium for that game as well. So again, we just really appreciate all the support that you can bring to it, and tell your friends. And thank you, Mac, for having us on.
Oh, most certainly. Thank you. So now for the last, there's like 6 minutes left. So, John, my main guest, I would like you to say whatever it is that you'd like to say, you know, about Manhattan Transfer, any of the guests. If you have questions for them, you know, feel free. So you've got about 5 minutes.
Boy, I don't know that I actually – have 5 minutes to say about that, but I do want to say how grateful I am. I am just blown away by the enthusiasm, continued enthusiasm that Sky has shown me over the years, and that now I'm seeing from Jack and even seeing from Ed tonight. I'm just very, very grateful. It's this is beyond my expectations by a huge margin. And I hope that the enthusiasm that you're putting into all this, that you're due, you know, rubs off on more crowdfunding people. Time will tell, but I've got my fingers crossed. And it would just be amazing to see this list of cast members up there on the screen for this.
Okay. Well, we do
agreed.
Have some more. Yeah, agreed, definitely. we do have some time left, but it's not like we got to go the whole thing. But we can by, and I'm going to do it a sort of funny way, by saying anybody that has anything to say, raise your hand. And by that, raise your hand, it means to say, I have something to say. So does anybody have something to say?
Do you have any mac and cheese to go with this?
Yeah.
I'm not the first person to say that, am I?
No.
Yeah, maybe.
No.
I knew Scott would have more to say.
Yeah.
There's one thing. Well, there is one thing that I forgot to say that I wanted to say, and that involves the sets, the incredible sets that we filmed of Gods and Men on. At the time, James Cawley had them up in Port Henry, and he has since then moved them down to Ticonderoga, and he's moved them into a permanent facility. Doing a little plug for James, because he's got, I think it's called Star Trek Series Sets Tour, and it's, I think it's authorized, licensed by Paramount.
It's licensed, and it's killer. I haven't been there since he moved it, but from the fans that go, of course, they just rave about it. And Walter's been there, Bill Shatner, George Takei, I think, Nichelle Nicholsman many years ago. So they're gorgeous, beautiful sets. Worthy to go see, that's for sure.
Yeah, and they have a lot
of actors.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, John.
I thought of something to add. This is not directly Manhattan Transfer related, but if reviewers want to get copies of these upcoming works from me, Tiny Time Machine and Disavowed, I'd encourage you to contact my publicist. She's Samantha Lien, L-I-E-N. She's sam@rogercharlie.com. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, I definitely wanted you to give that information, because I would have asked that, because it's like 2 minutes. And normally at the end, that's what I do. I have people tell about that, where they can buy the stuff or where they can contact you and things like that.
Yeah.
So we are down to 2 minutes. So is there anything else that you need to say, John?
I don't think so. Thank you. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, you're quite welcome. So I just want to say quickly in the last whatever minute and a half that my show tonight was called Manhattan Transfer from Book to Series with John E. Stith. John E. Stith, as I said, is a very well-known author, and he's won many awards. And my call-in guests were Jack Trevino and Sky Conway and Ed Abate, and I hope I pronounced that right, Ed. And I like all of – what's that, Ed?
Yeah, you said it right, Abate. You said it right, Abate.
Abate. Yeah, I thought I said it right. Okay. So thank you all for calling in and being part of the show. I appreciate it. And I have to close out the show because they will cut us off mid-sentence if we go too long. So this is your chance to say goodbye and have a great night. So I'll say first, goodbye, have a nice night, John. Okay,
good night,
bye.
All.
Good
night.
And Ed.
Good night, all. No
and
problem.
Yeah.
Nice
to okay, good night,
everybody.
Good night. Let's do this.
Okay, thanks a lot. Okay, I'm going to hang up now. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.